time. Good evening, everyone. Tonight we will speak about Torah and science, and I would prefer to answer a lot of your questions. And I hope you have questions. Take advantage of the opportunity that we have here tonight to ask me all these questions. Now, before I start the lecture, I want to know what kind of crowd I have. From 0 to 100%. Everybody in this room knows for sure, not believe, knows for sure that God exists. Anybody has doubts about it? Don't be embarrassed. I want to know the truth. Who has a little doubt, even 1% doubt? Raise his hand.
Don't be embarrassed. Don't be embarrassed.
Yeah, yeah. There's nothing to be embarrassed. We do this lecture to prove. Anyway, the hand will go down in an hour, so don't worry. No. Danny. Where is Danny? Danny. Everyone is a rabbi here.
Rabbi,
sure. Yeah.
Rabbi, can you please focus us? Because I believe there's some people over here that don't.
I didn't speak about the Torah yet. First, I'm asking, can you, Danny? It's hard. It's possible.
I was 95%.
Rabbi,
קיבלתי את הסיכוי שלך ביום, בעברית, אמציה. טוב מאוד, תודה. Yeah. Shh. Okay. Yeah. 1% doubt. How much? How many percent?
0.05.
Aha, so you almost know for sure, but you have a little doubt.
Ooh.
Right, that's normal. Guys, if you speak between you and the other side and everybody speaks to his neighbor, lecture we won't have here tonight, that's for sure. If you were ask me, I would give you the Chinese food after the lecture as a reward for behaving. Yeah. Now you got your reward. You don't need me anymore. That's it. All right. Maybe I'll tell you a joke. You like it. You calm down a little bit after the food, then we can start. You in a mood for a joke or not?
Yeah.
Always. Jokes everybody like. איזה בדיחה לתת להם, מיכאל? מה נתתי לנו? One cowboy came to the bar in Texas and he parked his horse outside. He drank a few beers and now he's about to leave. He sees his horse disappeared. So he started to scream, "Where is my horse? I'm counting to 10. If my horse is not back, don't let me do what I did when I was in Arizona. 10, 9, 8, 5, 2, 1, 0. He comes out, the horse is back. He gets on the horse, he's about to leave, so the barman asks him, "Excuse me, what did you do in Arizona?" He said, "I had to walk 2 hours home." He's going to blow up. I had to walk all the way home. No, it wasn't a good one. We need something more powerful. Something better. Something better. Huh? Uh-huh. Okay, I'm going to tell you one or two more jokes, but later on. You know, when we warm up, the jokes will become better. Okay, so second question for tonight. Second question for tonight. From 0 to 100%, who has doubt if the Torah is divine? The Torah scroll, the written Torah. Anybody thinks that there's a chance that Torah wasn't given to us by God? Maybe the rabbis made it up. Maybe it's a history book. Maybe it's a bunch of all kinds of things combined into a very famous book, but nothing is divine about it. Maybe it's a mixture of some divine and some human. What's your opinion? I want to know. Who thinks for sure that the Torah is 100% from God? Not 99, 100%. That if they tell you, if you're wrong, you have to fall from the Empire State Building, you won't be afraid. Right? They tell you step forward. If the Torah is from God, you won't fall. If it's not, you crash. Would you make a step?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
I'll take you there tomorrow morning.
Okay.
9 o'clock. So everybody knows? Anybody has doubts if the Torah is divine? Okay. Third question and the last one for tonight. The oral Torah. Torah Shebe'al Peh. The oral Torah. Anybody thinks that maybe the rabbis made it up? No? Okay, I already see more hands here. Yeah. No, Kadima, no, now it's...
I believe some guys, to be honest, I don't think they made it up. I think they changed some of the rules.
Yeah, they just add some stuff.
Or added.
Yeah, some stuff.
Some of the parts the rabbis did make. The rabbis did make.
All right. No. Let's not misunderstand the question. Shh. I ask if the rabbis made it up. I didn't ask if they alter it, make some modification. This is maybe something later to ask. Right now, the source of the oral Torah is from God or no? What do you think? For sure?
How do we know for sure?
That's why I'm asking. I want to know where to start the lecture from. I don't want to waste an hour until we get to the point.
Wait, what
did
you say?
The oral Torah. The Mishnah, the Gemara, everything that we say, Torah Shebe'al Peh, Halacha, Midrashim, all these things. The rabbi made it up when they were in a good mood. They sat and discussed what should we invent. And one guy said this, the other one argued, no, let's make it a little bit more, interesting. And all of a sudden, after 2,000 years that everybody had something extra, we now have the oral Torah. What do you think? Makes sense or no?
I think they changed it a lot.
Huh? Change it? Okay, so I will have to ask my fourth question. Now, since all of you, I didn't see any hand raised, since all of you agree that the Torah, the source of the oral Torah, is from God, then it makes me ask the fourth question. Do you think that the rabbi took the original oral laws of God and changed it, ruined it, made it more difficult? What do you think?
Not change it, but... he didn't change it, he just said halakhos about it. He didn't change it, clarify it.
Clarify it, it's very good. We clarify the Torah all the time.
Yeah.
No, that's no problem. I say changed it, modified it, invent new things, made up things that we didn't know about. Okay, I got the point here now. Okay, so when we review the written Torah, we see that the written Torah has Ele HaTorot. Those are the Torahs in plural, with S. So obviously plural is more than one, right? At least two, that I put in the hand of Moshe in Har Sinai, in Mount Sinai. So right away we see that there was more than one Torah. Second thing is that if we review the 613 laws that God gave the Jews, Taryag Mitzvot, it's a combination of 248 positive mitzvot, 365 restrictions you should not do. 365. The body of the human being is a combination of 248 organs, 365 ligaments. For every organ in a body, we have a positive mitzvah. 248 organs, 248 positive mitzvot. You should do 248 times. 365 ligaments, 365 restrictions. Yes?
I looked up the ligaments. On the internet,
it
says there's over 900 ligaments in the
body. Maybe sometimes they break one ligament into two, but one of the things that the Torah told us, that the body is a combination of 613 parts. And we have a very famous expression in Hebrew. Ani Yehudi, I'm a Jew, beramach evarai veshasa gidai. Ramach evarim, ramach resh mem chet, 248. Shasa, Shin, Samech, Hey, 365. It's always been accepted that this is it. The ladies, by the way, have few organs and ligaments a little less than a man. So we're talking based on the body of a man. Yes, it's true. Okay, now, Regardless of that, if we review the 613 orders that God told us, do you think it's possible to understand one of them, even by 1%, how to do it without the oral laws? Do you think any of the mitzvot, any of the 613 orders or restrictions, is it possible to do one of them without learning carefully what the oral Torah instructed us? Do you think it's possible? What do you think? If yes, please tell me which mitzvah you think we will be able to do without the instruction of the oral laws. Do you know any mitzvah that we can do? Yeah.
Where it says, I am God and the only one.
Yeah.
So you're the only one.
I am what? I didn't hear you.
Ani Hashem
Elokechem.
Not true. Even here, do you know how many orders we have about I'm your God? What does it mean, I'm your God? What does it mean, Ve'yadata Ayom, you should know I'm your God? What does it mean to have Kavana? Can you tell me what does it mean to have Kavana, to have intention when you make a bracha or Yichud Hashem? Do you know how many books were written about I'm your God? I can give you hundreds of books just about this. No, tell me which mitzvah we would be able to know. You see, I give you an example. If you ask a secular Jew about respecting your father and mother, do you need the oral laws for that? Or everybody understand what respect is? So right away they're going to say, no, I know how to respect. I know not to beat them up, not to steal money from them, not to argue with them, not to insult them. If they need something from me, I have to do it for them. If I can help them financially, I'll do so. Right? That's respecting father and mother. That's not even 0.001% from the instructions that the Torah say about respecting parents. Do you know how many laws? I'll give you an example. If your father came to you, you are the president of Microsoft. You took Bill Gates' chair. You're sitting there with your $10,000 suit. And you're sitting in the middle of a meeting, and your father, he only owned a little grocery store, he dressed not so nice. He walked inside, in the middle of everyone, he gave you a smack, he started to rip your clothes away, tear off your jacket off, whatever, he spilled tea in your face and everything. In front of everybody, and there's reporters, newspaper reporters, they're all filming everything. Now, what do you think? Are you allowed to respond?
No.
Or you have to sit there and do nothing. What do you think? What's the law? You ask anybody in the world, of course respond. I'll call security. What is this? With all the respect, it's tearing my suit, it's $10,000 suit. So what's the law in this case? You're allowed to sue your father in court? How do you know? Maybe yes. No? How would we know all these laws? Without the oral laws, we would never know what to do. Here, you have a case like this. Can you understand what to do? The answer is, you cannot make a beep about anything he told you or did to you, except to sue him for the value of the suit. He has to pay you for the suit, that's all. Because that's already nezikin, that's already damages, financial damages. If he steals for you, he has to pay back. Same thing like stealing. But anything else he did to you, yes, father, I'm very sorry, you're right, 100%. No. Without the oral laws, nobody would ever imagine such a thing. There's a limit how much respect we can give, right? If your father sent you to the store 500 times a day, he wanted one candy. I want a candy. Go to the store, babe. Oh, Dad, I'll buy you a whole bag. No, buy me one. You go, you bought him one, you came back, and then 2 minutes later he said, you know what, it's a good idea, go get me another one. I just told you, I will get you a whole bag. No, buy me one at a time. You go again, you buy him another one. 10 minutes later, he sends you again, all day like this. You can't make a beep. Make sense? Go tell it to the kids today.
I have a question.
Yes.
But
what's going on over there? We have the Moazin here?
How do I know the real Torah is actually real?
We get to it. You're asking something that I ask. That means I will get to it, yeah.
Don't lie in a legal court.
Don't lie in a legal court? No. Or sometimes it's a mitzvah to lie in a legal court. You want to hear? let's say the goyim wants to take a Jew that he got inside information in a stock market. Somebody told him the company XYZ in a week from now will become double. Buy it. And he went and bought, I don't know, 100,000 shares. And he made, I don't know, $500,000 profit. And the security in the stock market caught him. And now you have to testify against him. Because let's say you work in a company, you're not allowed to convict him. Why? Because according to the Torah, he did nothing wrong. Inside information in Japan, it's legal. And in many other countries. Inside information means you have a friend that have a store and he wants to sell it for very cheap price. The store really worth $1 million and your friend is sick. Nobody knows he's sick. He's dying and his time is running out. He's afraid that if he'll die, his wife will take away the store and he doesn't want. So he wants to sell the business and give the cash to one of his friends. So because he's in a rush, he wants to sell the store for $500,000 instead of $1 million. And he told it to you. Nobody knows yet. Tomorrow he's about to put an ad in the newspaper. Nobody knows. And he told it to you, and you ran to one of your best friends that has the cash. Come quickly before tomorrow it will be too late and buy it. And he came and bought it. According to the law in the United States, it's exactly like inside information. Nobody knew about it before it became public. And he benefits from knowledge that somebody gave him. Because of that, he goes to 6 years in prison and lose everything he has. They take away his home, his money, they freeze everything he has, the Jew. If he made $10,000, you understand? He has to pay $300,000 to the lawyer. So in a court, you're not allowed to testify against a Jew like this that he's going to lose his life and the children are going to be on the street. Why? Because he made $10,000 because somebody told him that his company will do good. You understand? Some of the laws here or in Israel are against the Torah. When we have a conflict, we must stick to the Torah because it's God's order. It's more important than what people made up. All right, so this is just one example. So, depend on the situation. What else? Can we make one mitzvah without the oral laws? The answer is no. We don't know anything. We don't know. We cannot make one mitzvah without it. What's with the radio over there? It's a problem. Okay, so let's move on. The Torah says that every time the Jew has a question to the rabbis, he has to go to the judge or to the rabbi and ask them what to do. It says it in Parashat Shoftim. Everything they're going to tell him, he must listen to them, the Torah says. Do not move left or right from everything they told you. Because if you're going to do so, you have to be executed and the Jewish court has to clean all the evilness out of the Jewish nation. That's what the Torah says. Which means, God says to the Jews, I nominate the rabbis that knows my Torah to judge based on my Torah, not based on their Harvard degree. They have a Harvard degree, it can help them in other things. But if they sit in a Jewish court, they cannot use any of the Harvard knowledge that they have. Let's say it's a judge in a Supreme Court, and he's also a rabbi, and he sits now in Beis Din. He has to forget completely what he learned by there, because 50% of what he's going to say according to the Supreme Court is the opposite of the Torah. For instance, if somebody broke into a store and stole $100, and the police caught him, and they bring him to the court, he may get, I don't know, a year in prison, let's say, right? And some fine. According to the Torah, he doesn't have to sit one day in a prison. He has to pay double from the damage he made. If he stole $100, he has to pay the owner $200, and excuse me for the inconvenience, apologize, forgive me. If he broke the glass, of course, he has to pay for the glass separately. And that's it. So basically, his punishment will be 2 minutes. Here, $200, finished. According to the court in the United States or in Israel, he'll go to jail for a few years. Contradict the Torah completely. What would happen in jail? He'll become a murderer after 3 years. He'll meet some murderers over there. He'll see how they do things over there. And, you know, bad influence. Now he won't steal $100. He will steal $100 million next time. What a fool I am. For $100, I'm sitting here for 3 years. You understand? So the Torah say, pay double. Let's move on. So the Torah say, everything the rabbis tell you, based on my Torah, you must listen to them. Do not move left or right, anything from what they say. Now, if the Torah wouldn't say it, then we have a very serious problem. No rabbi will allow to direct people to do anything.
What did the Torah say?
In Parashat Shoftim. Uvata el ha-kohen ve'el ha-dayan asher be'ircha. The Torah speaks about the future. If any question you have, and you come to the judges, to the rabbis in your place, and you ask them what to do, everything they order you based on my Torah, you must listen to them. Now, I want to remind you that based on the Torah, they cannot instruct you in any way. Any question you ask based on the written Torah, the rabbis will never know the answer. You ask the rabbi, Rabbi, I want you to tell me, how do I keep Shabbat? Or did I violate the rules of the Sabbath? So based on the scroll, where does it say in the Torah how to keep Shabbat?
Sometimes they don't make up their own answer, like they give their own.
No, the Torah say based on my Torah, not based on their opinion. Remember, the Torah is very specific.
Well, some rabbis they tell you you could shave. Who's that rabbi that made it okay to shave?
Like,
before him, like, no one would shave.
Okay, the word shaved, it's something modern. Until 100 years ago, nobody shaved, even the most wicked people. Darwin had a very big beard, long beard. Herzl, you know about Herzl?
Yeah.
Herzl, he planned to convert all the Jews to Christianity. Read in his book, Alt Neulein, he has a book. He had a very long beard. Gordon, all the communists, all the anti-religious people, they had very big, very long beard. The Goyim has beards, the Indian has beard, the American had beards. If somebody dared to shave 100 years ago, everybody will look at him in the market and point, look, a woman is passing by. Nobody ever saw such a thing. And they didn't have a machine. They had the special paste they used to put on a face, and it eats up the roots. Oh, and a person doesn't have a beard. Until later, they made razors and all kinds of things. Like today, we have shaving machines. So to the word shaving, it's really trimming the beard. As long as you don't touch with the blades in the roots, it's no sins whatsoever. According to Kabbalah, you're limiting your wisdom by doing it. If you were 100% smart, now you're only 90%. You understand?
Why?
Because the beard is the root of wisdom. And the hair on top is exactly the opposite. That's why the Torah does not permit to have long hair in the front or ponytail and all these things. Torah is very specific about haircuts. Don't cut here short and leave a lot here.
The Torah says,
when I say Torah, sometimes I mean written, sometimes I mean oral. It's 100% the same. Guys, I cannot focus when you're constantly talking. If it's continue like this, we're going to have to call it off. 5 more minutes, we're going to try. From the beginning of the lecture, is only talking, and it's very hard for me to focus. I'm sorry, some speakers, they can speak like robots. Noise, gunshots, they talk. I think in a second what to say. I don't prepare the lecture. It's spontaneous. And because you're talking, you keep cutting me all the time. So if you want to have some kind of lecture tonight, we came all the way here, let's do it. Half an hour, don't talk. Sit and don't talk. Don't make comments to your friends. Don't talk anything. Just ask me, talk to me, I answer you. That will be productive. So let's move on. So we answered the point about shaving, but I want you to get the concept. There is no way to do anything without the oral laws. I'll give you an example. When Moshe came down from the mountain, God told him to do certain things. You can read in a written Torah. And he does not instruct him how to do it. Sacrifice. There's a lot of laws. How to sacrifice an animal. What to check. What not to do. What to do. What to do with the blood. The altar. So God told him, as I ordered you, in the mountain. So that means only God and Moshe knows what to do. Nobody else knows. So you see this information that does not appear in a book that Moshe had. I'll give you another example. The Torah says three times, "Lo tevashel gdi b'chalev imo." Do not cook
a goat
in the milk of his mother. I hope I translated that in a correct way. So the Torah, the oral Torah. Now this is the written Torah. If we wouldn't have the oral Torah, we would think that God forgot that he already said it in the beginning of the book. And maybe a week later, when he started to continue his book, he repeated it again. And a month later, when he continued, he repeated it again. So now it appears three times in the Torah. This is only correct for human book, not for divine books. Divine books, it's more precise than a computer. If you put something twice to the computer right away, the computer show you, hey, it's already there. You have it. Do you want to replace it or not? Obviously, every fool even understands that God cannot forget. A perfect thing, such as the creator of the world, it doesn't belong to forget anything. So the point is, if it mentioned... So if it mentioned in the Torah three times the same thing, now we go to the oral Torah. The oral Torah say one time not to eat it. Cheeseburger and all these things that somebody served to you. Glad kosher meat, glad kosher cheese, cooked together, a Jew cannot eat. What's the second time? If a Jew made a mistake and cook it together, you may think he give it to his dog. He give it to his goy worker, the Gentile. He can eat. It's no problem. Why should I lose $10 now? The burger and the cheese. Here, enjoy it. So the Torah says, no. Once you did it, you must destroy it. You can't even give it to the dog. What's the third time? That even to cook it for the goyim, you're not allowed. So that means if a Jew wants to make himself a burger place and to sell cheeseburgers to goyim in a black neighborhood in Harlem, there's no Jews there, all black people. And they want a cheeseburger and the Jew on the store, the Jew is not allowed to cook it for them. Not allowed. Why? To put that together, it's already a sin. That's why it repeats in the Torah three times. Many, many examples. The Torah says nothing in the Torah is mentioned more than once for no reason. If it mentioned more than once, every time it's teaching us something new. Also, certain things are mentioned in the Torah many times to show us that it's very important for God. For instance, Shabbat. This is an eternal covenant between me and the nation of Israel for eternity, not for 70 years. Or few lifetimes that we come in reincarnations for eternity. You know what the word eternity means? Trillions of years is not even the beginning. The covenant of the Shabbat, it's so important. It's an eternal spiritual covenant between me and my children, those who are chosen, the Jews. Therefore, if a Jew violates this covenant, he cut himself out of my nation. Don't come to me to complain later on. That's why Shulchan Aruch says in seven different places, "Mechalel Shabbat, areu kegoy lechol davar." A Jew that doesn't observe the Sabbath, he is 100% like a goy. That's in Shulchan Aruch. I didn't write it. And the Rambam, and the Gemara, and the Zohar, everybody agrees. No arguments. So, just to give you an example, Judaism, the foundation of Judaism, starts with the Sabbath, Shabbat. Why it mentioned 12 times in the Torah? Once or twice. We got the point, no? To show you how severe and how important this thing is in the eyes of God. There's only one thing in the entire Torah that mentioned more than Shabbat. Who knows what?
Converts.
Converts. Sure. To love the converts. Mm-hmm. To respect the converts. Not to cheat them. What do you mean not to cheat them? I'm not allowed to cheat any Jew. I'm not allowed to cheat Jews. The convert became an official Jew. Why you have to tell me do not cheat him also? Why you have to tell me don't abuse him, don't create any inconvenience for him? Why you have to tell me to respect him? All these things I have to do to any Jew. So the convert is another Jew? No. To show you that if you do it to another Jew, if you offend another Jew, you insult him, you steal from him, you beat him up, whatever you do, that's a sin. But if you do it to a convert, it's a much worse sin. Understand? That's why it mentioned 36 times in different variations. Okay, let's move on. I want to show you, first of all, two or three proofs that the oral Torah could never be given by a human being. Good? I show you two or three proofs. I have hundreds, obviously. Don't have time tonight. The rest, I'm going to give you free DVDs if you stay until the end of the lecture on the way out. I have in my car. Free DVDs that you can see all of it. 3 hours, proof, one after the other. Very interesting. But in the meantime, I would like to show you two or three proofs about that we know that the Torah is divine. Here, this is an example. I'll give you the first example. Here. The Torah says, this is what you're allowed to eat from the water. Which water? The Torah did not specify. 72% of the world is water. 72%, almost three quarters. How deep? 12 kilometers, 8 miles, from here to Queens, approximately. That's how deep. They found it's much, much deeper. But so far, this is how deep we were able to arrive. Now, there are more than 40,000 different kinds of fish. Scorpions, snakes, so many different species in the oceans. We are talking 3,320 years since it was given to us in Mount Sinai. This is in front of you apart from the written Torah. This is what you're allowed to eat from everything in the water. Which water? 72% of the world. The lakes, the river, the oceans, the swimming pools in your backyard, everywhere. What does it mean, etzeh? This. This can be anything. Anything that moves in the ocean, the Torah speaks about, not necessarily fish. The Torah says, this is what you're allowed to eat. Everything that has fins and scales, you're allowed to eat. And this is the two witnesses, fins and scales. You took something, you never saw it in your life. You scratch it, pieces are falling off the scales. You see that it has fins, let's eat it. Your friends say, how do you know? Maybe it's not kosher. What do you mean? The Torah says, you need two witnesses here. The scales are one and the fins are two. Kosher. Comes the oral Torah and say another detail about it. What is that detail? Very interesting. Everything that have scales for sure have fins. Guarantee. Interesting. Which means if one day you are arrested in jail and there's nothing to eat and they give the prisoners food to cook for themselves. So they give you half a fish. You don't see the tail. You see the head, half. You don't see the fins. You just see scales on the fish. You scratch, but where are the fins? I don't know, maybe this fish never had fins. Don't worry, my friend. God says that everything that have scales for sure have fins, guarantee. Which means, if somebody will find one fish or anything, a snake, snakes have smooth body. Let's say that we're going to find a snake with scales. And he has a tail. It doesn't have fins. We scratch the scales from the snake. They're falling off. Here is a mistake in the Torah. The Torah says everything that has scales must have fins. This snake doesn't have fins. It has a long tail. The Torah is finished. Tefillin is finished. Yom Kippur is finished. Passover is finished. You should not kill is finished. You should not be anything that the Torah says. It's all finished. We sacrifice millions of lives for this book. We just found an error, a human error in a book. Cannot rely on it ever again. This is the only book in history that dare to say more than once, many, many times, you will never find mistake in it. Never. Why? Because we know for sure that it's divine. The Christians never promised such a thing. The Muslims never promised it. We showed them how many mistakes, as you can see the debate that I had with the priest, how many mistakes I showed him inside the New Testament. Or in my video that I'm going to give you, I can show you how many mistakes the Quran has. But in our Torah, you cannot find mistakes ever. And if there is something that looks like a mistake, right away you go to the oral law, it combines together. Right away, it explains why. You understand? That's the difference. Many Muslims and Christians send me email the prophet says this, the Torah says this, so how come? So for instance, they say, Ben Shana Shaul Bemolcho, King Saul is 1 year old when he became the king. So one Arab from Egypt sent me an email. Say, I watched your video, very interesting. But I want to ask you a question. You said the Bible doesn't have mistakes. King Saul, do you believe he was 1 year old when he became the king? So I send him an email. Dear Yasser, not Arafat. He wrote to me in the first email, Yasser, and he wrote, not Arafat. So I said, Dear Yasser, do you really believe that a person, even the dumbest in history, that comes to write a phony book, will write that a king became, 1 year old became a king? Do you know any idiot like this? Find me that fool that would write a phony book and will make such a mistake. King Saul was 1 year old. He didn't go to the oral Torah. You understand? Everything, the Torah explains everything. But you have to see, this is what we say in the Torah, Mishpatei Hashem, Emet Tzadeku Yachdav. The Torah of Hashem, it's true when it's all combined together. If you take one part of the puzzle, you don't see the picture. Imagine this picture right here, it's a puzzle with 1,000 pieces. If I take 500 pieces out, you don't see the truth anymore. The picture lost its meaning. Sometimes you take one piece out, the picture lost its value. The Torah, it's only correct when it's all combined. You take one letter out of the Torah, you lose the value of the Torah. So let's give another example. The Torah says that the Torah says that the nation of Israel came to God to complain after the destruction of the second temple. They said, Dear God, a person got remarried and he never forgot his ex-wife. He can never forget that once he was married. If you ask a person 20 years after he got divorced, excuse me, sir, do you remember if you've been married before or not? I can never forget. Do I remember? I have nightmares for 20 years. Nobody ever forgets his ex. Whether they were good, whether they were bad, doesn't matter. You remember 50 years ago you were married. So the Torah said to God, the Chachamim, the Knesset Israel, say, Dear God, a person gets remarried and he still remembers his ex-wife. And you forgot us and neglected us completely? What's the answer? This is oral Torah. All the proofs that I show you, it's all oral Torah, not written. Here, Amar la Kadosh Baruch Hu, God say, Biti, my daughter, 12 sections I created in heaven. And in each section I created 30 army. And in each army I created 30 legion. In each legion I created 30 raton. In each raton I created 30 karaton. In each karaton I created 30 gistera. In each gistera I hung 365,000 multiplied by 10,000 stars. And all of that I created for you, for the nation of Israel. And you have the nerve to say that I forgot you and left you? This is in Masechet Brachot, page 32. Until 400 years ago, everybody in the world thought that we have maximum 6,000 to 8,000 stars. Why? People were standing on mountains and counting. There was no telescope yet. So they count. I count 7,000. No record. All over the world, the highest count was 8,000. That's it. Comes Galileo Galilei in 1608. He writes this telescope. Psh, big shock. There's hundreds of thousands of stars. We couldn't see them. Now we can see. 6 feet telescope, you see a lot more. Now you can count 100,000. Then they develop a much bigger telescope. Now you can count millions. Now you can count billions. Now you can count trillions. Now you have satellites that take picture of all the galaxies. And the mega computer the size of a building count all the pictures. And it tells you how many stars you have. They never know 100%, obviously. But they get an idea. Now this was written in a generation that there was no telescope, no satellite, no mega computer, no way to even dream that there are trillions and trillions of galaxies and stars. And it was written in a book. And let's do the calculation together. Let's see if the Torah knew what they're talking about. 12 sections I created in heaven. And in each one, 30 and 30 and 30 and 30 and 30, 365,000, 10,000, 10 to the power of 19 stars. In a generation, they didn't even have a calculator. Okay? Now, let's see what the scientists have to say. In 1990, Dr. T. Brewers from Queen Mary College in London had a research with mega computer and found 10 to the power of 19 stars in universe. And the most interesting thing is that after this research that cost fortune and took many, many years, and listen to this. This is what he found right here, the white. This is what the Gemara says, the oral Torah. The Torah says, Mazalot, he doesn't know about this Gemara. He called it with his own name. What is it? Galactic cell. What the Torah called Chayil, army, he called local groups of galaxies. What the Torah called legion, he called galaxies. What the Torah called Raton, he calls galactic areas. What the Torah called Karaton, he called groups of galaxies. What the Torah called Gistera, he called globular groups of stars. What the Torah called stars, he also called stars. Look, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 sections. One inside the other, the same thing like the Torah. Now, do you know a person 2,000-3,000 years ago that could write such a thing? What, in a dream? How did he know to write such a thing? This is oral Torah. So right away we see, so far, that there are parts, we didn't review the entire oral Torah. We don't have time for this now. But we already see information in the oral Torah that can never be given by a human being. Never. On top of that, we see that there is no way to understand one mitzvah without the instruction of the oral laws. Now, I want to ask you a question. Please raise your hand if you want to talk. Do you think it's possible that God gathered 15 million Jews around Mount Sinai 3,320 years ago? He spoke the first two commandments. Everybody heard God and Moshe speaking. He gave Moshe, after 40 days, he gave him the Torah. Moshe came down. He wrote to them the Torah. And nowhere in the Torah it says how to do the mitzvot. So why you gave us Torah? To waste time? Why would you give me 613 commandments when you did not tell me even one of them how to do? I don't know. How to make a matzah? I don't know. How to make circumcision? It's one of the three covenants. Shabbat, Brit, Tefillin. Shabbat, circumcision, and Tefillin. I don't know how to circumcise a boy. So why are you telling me, be careful, if you don't circumcise him, he's a goy. He did not become officially a Jew. If you never told me how to do a Brit Milah in a Torah, he never told me where to cut. The Torah says cut the Orla in the 8th day. Where is Orla? Nowhere in the book. Nowhere. I claim this is Orla. He claimed, no, Orla, it's this. He claimed, no, this is Orla. He said, no, Orla, it's the nails. Everybody think Orla, it's something else. Without the oral Torah, you wouldn't know. On top of that, when Moshe came down from the mountain, what do you think the first thing he started to do? Let's say Pesach came, or Sukkot, the holiday came. Moshe gathered everyone. He took the 70 older people, and he told each one of them how to do it. And now each one of them went to their group and taught them what to do. For instance, when they wanted to prepare tefillin, nowhere in the written Torah it says how to make tefillin. Do you know how many things you have to do until you make a pair of tefillin? If they would make it in the United States, it would be minimum $10,000 a pair, minimum, based on labor, according to the salaries of American people. It would charge about $30 an hour. The amount of hours would be $10,000, for sure. So, from 1,000 instructions that you have in a tefillin, if one of them you did incorrect, one thing you did wrong or you skip one, that feeling is pasul. It doesn't worth a penny, nothing. Bury it in the ground. Where is the 1,000 instructions how to make tefillin in a written Torah? Nowhere. So what do you think? Moshe came and started to think, the Torah said to put a sign on the hand. I don't know where, the left, the right, I don't know which part of the hand, I don't know how the sign's going to look, so let's make it up. So Moshe now is sitting and thinking about 1,000 steps from his head, how to make tefillin. What do you think? Make sense? Why would God waste his time? Why are you bringing me to the mountain to give me a book? You don't tell me how to do. You don't even tell me how to circumcise. You tell me that Mechalel Shabbos should be executed to death, but you don't tell me how to keep Shabbos. Imagine. Be careful. Do not violate my Sabbath. It's a holy covenant. Someone who does it, Chas v'Shalom, should get cut out of my nation, should be put to death. And you say, okay, God, I got the warning. Tell me how to keep Shabbat. Nowhere in a book. How do you know there are 39 restrictions in Shabbat? You don't have it in the written Torah. How do you know which one are the 39? You don't have it. You understand? Okay, now comes the next thing. Shh. As I told you, I have many proofs. I'll give you the DVDs, you watch them. What is the next thing? How come sometimes we see that we have mitzvah from the Torah and mitzvah from the rabbis? That's what you ask in the beginning of the lecture. Who gave the rabbis permission to invent new mitzvot? Up to now, it was, I think, perfectly clear that if you have a question about the written and the oral Torah, you have to go to the rabbis to instruct you what to do, and you must listen to them. Why? God nominated them. If he wouldn't, they are nothing. For me, the rabbis could be dust in the wind. I can care less what they say. After God said, you must listen to them, and if not, chas v'shalom, the people who rebel against them should be executed, like Korach and his group, and many other examples. Now I don't deal with the rabbis anymore. I deal with the messenger of God. He told us in his Torah, you must listen to everything they direct you based on my Torah. Now we have a few problems. First problem, sometimes you go to one rabbi and he say, do left. Sometimes you go to another rabbi and he say, do right. What am I going to do now? They both bring me the proof from the same Torah. Two rabbis, tell me the opposite, one from the other. What do you think? Make sense or no? Huh? What do you think?
No.
Make sense? But we see it all the time. We see in the Gemara. We see today even. The answer is, God gave us the written Torah and the oral Torah like a diamond before you process it. How to process the diamond, it's your free choice how to do it. When two people sit and learn from the same Torah, they can use their imagination and understanding and they can come to two different conclusions. And we all understand that really according to the source, there should be only one truth, not two. Cannot be this and this is right. He tells you do it today and the other one says no, the holiday is tomorrow. It cannot be both of them are right. We don't care. We don't care who really writes. Why? Because the Torah told us if there will be a disagreement between the rabbis, you have to follow the majority. That's why 71 of them has to sit in a Sanhedrin. In case they have a disagreement, you count. It can never be a tie because it's 71. What's the majority? This is the law. You got it? So now the Torah answers another one of our doubts. Then there is another thing. When we go into the Talmud, what do we see? We see that the Gemara say, Halacha like Rabbi Akiva. Halacha like Rabbi Meir. The law, it's like him. The law, it's like him. The law, it's like him. Everybody else say their own opinion. But the Chachamim made a verdict. This is the Halacha and nobody can ever contradict it. Now, last thing before we finished. Everything is clear. So the rabbi clarified for me everything. We reached a verdict. Nobody can ever open it. Fine. But who told the rabbis to invent new laws? For instance, Mukzeh. All the laws of Mukzeh on Shabbat, you cannot touch the electronic. You cannot touch a needle. You cannot touch a pen. You cannot... There's so many things. It's all the Rabbanan. Really, before the rabbis made Mukzeh, right? Hundreds of years before the Sanhedrin and the Knesset HaGdola, it was perfectly legal. So what's going on here? The answer is, God told the rabbis, Vasu mishmeret lemishmarti. Make a fence around my fence. Why you need two fences? You have one fence 10 steps from the bomb. And comes the commander and say, make another fence 30 feet from the bomb. Why you need another fence? To be more cautious. If you have only one fence, one fool comes and jump, boom, he explodes. Make another one. That in case he jumps, there's enough time to stop him. That's how the whole world operates. Not only in Torah, in medicine, in law, in many different things. So, when Chachamim saw that until 2,000 years ago, men and women used to be very modest and respectful. No man dared to touch a woman without marrying her first. And the women never let anybody touch them. The people were very, very careful with holiness. All of a sudden, the rabbi saw 2,000 years ago approximately that people are not so modest anymore. They're not so modest. Oh, one sin here, one sin over there. What did the Torah say to the Chachamim? Open your eyes and review. You be the police of the generation. See what needs to be corrected to prevent my children from making sins. So when they saw that now when a man and a woman are together in a room, it could lead to a sin already because the people are not strong like they used to be in the last 1,000 years, they made a new law. It's called Isur Yichud, that a man and a woman cannot lock themselves in a closed room without windows, that nobody has access to the room. Why? Because if they'll do it, there is a high chance that it will end with a very horrible sin. Who told the Chachamim to watch their eyes and save the Jews from the sins? Who? You think they sat one day and enjoyed? Let's make another rule. No. They saw that tragedies begins to happen. And they made a law. I'll give you another example. You cannot take a shower with hot water on Shabbat. With cold water, completely cold, you're allowed. In a humid August night, if you're very humid and you walked a lot, and you want to just go into freezing, it's not so pleasant, freezing water, but if you want, you allow the Ashkenazim, their custom that they don't take showers at all on Shabbat, but Sfaradi that wants to take a shower with cold water, he is allowed. So now the question is, why are we not allowed to take a shower with hot water? What happens if I heat the water 5 minutes before Shabbat? The water are boiling. And I know it takes about 5-6 hours until it becomes completely cold in a boiler. I close the boiler. I come from shul after walking an hour. I'm all sweaty and sticky. I want to take a shower with hot water. I did not turn the boiler on. No electric involved. No cooking is involved. Nothing. I still not allowed to take a hot shower. Why? Because 2,000 years ago, they used to have mikveh. There was no personal shower. You press a button, you have all kinds of water coming from all over. The shower was the mikveh. How was the mikveh? They had baths. Under there, they put pieces of stone, of woods, and they made fire all the time. They have to add wood to keep the water hot. So people, it was public showers. Hammam, they go inside. On Shabbat morning, some people that wants to go into the mikveh tahara, it's freezing. There's no insulation like today. You go inside and you don't feel anything. There's wind coming from all over. So they wanted to keep the water hot. What did they used to do? Come 5 in the morning, bring pieces of wood on Shabbat, the owners of the mikveh, because it's a big time money. They add pieces of wood into the fire and make chilul Shabbat. But nobody sees them. The Chachamim saw that Jews becoming Mechalel Shabbat for money, they made a decree. No Jews are allowed to take hot baths on Shabbat. End of story. Now you can cheat as much as you want. You won't get anything. 2,000 years, no one is allowed to change. Now I want to ask you a question. Okay, the people 2,000 years ago cheat because they didn't have they didn't have another way to do it. So they add wood. But today we don't need wood. It's primitive. Today it's not relevant. Cancel it. Let's cancel that law and take hot shower. We close the boiler. You have enough water in a tank. At least Friday night you can take hot shower. What would happen if we do such a thing? This is what the reforms did. 200 years ago, the reform came with a solution in mitzvah tzitzit. That one of the things in mitzvah tzitzit, it's irrelevant anymore. And they decided to cancel it. 10 years later, one of them came and said, based on the previous rabbis that canceled this mitzvah, I can prove that this mitzvah, it's not relevant anymore. So let's cancel it. 250 years later, they don't have one mitzvah left. Because the nature of the people is that once you begin to cut, you cut everything. Same thing a thief. If a thief found that he has a safe somewhere with lots of money, the first day only take 100, nobody will realize. What do you think happened the next day? That's it? He's okay with that? He returns right there to take 200. And even though he knows that if he continues to steal, eventually there will be nothing left. For sure they'll realize. He can't help it. That's the human nature. La petach chatat rovet. Same thing with drugs. How the drug dealers get clients? In the beginning, they're very generous. Here, come. On the house, take. Take, enjoy. No problem. No money. Don't worry. 5-6 times, he gets you into the system and destroy your life, your family, your children. Everyone goes to the garbage. And all your money, and you cannot work, you cannot function. I don't have to tell you what's going on. I know a great family like this. One day the guy, a lawyer, disappeared. Calls, phone calls, nobody knows where he is. The rumor was depression. Depression, no? I say to myself, doesn't make sense. A very handsome guy, very good heart, from a very wealthy family, a lawyer that himself made good income, a very beautiful wife, very nice house, and the young people. What can be depression? Only months later I found out cocaine. Addiction to cocaine, his life destroyed, got divorced, lost his children. Bitter end. How did it start? He tried once. Many people say, no, Rabbi, it's only grass. Don't worry, don't make a mistake. I don't touch these, God forbid, chemicals. All the chemical addictions started with grass. What do you think? They went right away to cocaine? They also tried this. And then the snake came and said, don't worry, God won't kill you. How did he say to Eve, Chava? No, don't worry, you can touch the tree here. Look, nothing happened. Yeah, don't worry, tell your husband. This is how it goes. You fall in the first step, for sure you're going to go to the next one. Do you know how many people in the history try for the forbidden things and stop right there? How many? Some people say, Rabbi, I'm Shomer Negia. I don't let any guy touch me. I'm going on a date, I'm not doing anything. Some little bit, handshakes and this and that. In my history, I never saw a man and a woman and can be together for dates for hours and not ended up making a scene of karet. But they can do it. The Gemara say Abaye, one of the greatest Amoraim we had in the Gemara, he heard that the boy and the girl, the guy wants to give the girl a ride. 3 days with a carriage. 3 days. Day and night. There was no lights. You have to ride on a horse around the clock for 3 days from Jerusalem to go somewhere to the center of Israel. He heard that. He said, I must follow them. He was a very old man. The big rabbi, the biggest in the world, Abaye and Rava. Every page in the Gemara, you see his name. And he heard that they're about to live together. He said, for sure, they're going to make a scene. Just a matter of time. I must prevent it. Why? The Torah says you should love your Jewish fellow like you love yourself. Or, lo ta'amud al dam re'echa. You should not stand while your brother's blood is spilling. Do something about it. If a Jew is drowning, you have to jump and save him. No, my suit is $1,000, Rabbi. I don't want to ruin my suit. What are you talking about suit now? The life of a person here, you understand? So he followed them. After 3 days, he saw that they separated and they did not touch one another. A world record. He fell on the floor and he started to cry. Somebody passed by and said, Rabbi, why are you crying here? What happened? So you see that guy over there? Yeah. You see that girl over there? Yeah. I've been following them from Yerushalayim all the way to here for 3 days. No? What happened? They did not touch one another even once. Ah, the guy said, Baruch Hashem, very good news. Why you cry? So you don't get it, huh? If I would give her a ride for 3 days, I wouldn't be able to overcome the test. Understand? The Gemara says, "En apotropus la'arayot." Once you start with boys and girls, for sure you ended up in a sin. And some of you here, I see, you know, in Hebrew we call it datilonim. You know what does it mean, datiloni? You have dati, you have chiloni. Datiloni means 50-50. Shomer Shabbos, touching girls, going to the feeder, on the internet doing bad things, eating glad kosher, but goes with his friends. No, it's not so kosher. Only tonight, Rabbi. You know, based on the mood. The idea is that the Jew always have to search for the truth. To put his convenience as the last priority. Forget about my convenience, what I like, what I don't like, how hard it's going to be, how much money it's going to cost. Forget about all this. First, you have to get yourself used to this formula. What's the first thing you check? What is the truth? If this is the truth, now I have to work on myself to get myself to the truth. Not to bring the truth to me, like 99% of the Jews doing. As a mixed dancing, wedding, everybody hug and kiss. It's my sister. It's my cousin. How am I not going to go? They'll get offended. Now, you have a point. What about what God says? God says boys and girls together in a dancing floor, it's a very big sin. Didn't he know that your cousin will get offended when you give the Torah? Did he know the truth? Did he know that some Persian would like to dance in a wedding? Sure he knew. What did he say in the Torah? Ya'arek ve'lo ya'avor. The Torah says if a woman walk in front of a man to see her body, how she dance and move, she should die and not agree to do such a thing. It's a Gemara. Gemara says one person fell in love with a woman. You know, fell in love, fell. So he fell in love, and he came to his doctor and said, Doctor, if I don't marry this woman, I kill myself. I can't live anymore. I can't function, I cannot do anything. So the doctor said, okay, so it's pikuach nefesh, it's a life risk. Let me go to the rabbi, see what they say. Came to the rabbi and say, Rabbi, what do you think? The rabbi said, Ya'areg ve'lo ya'avor, let him die. And he cannot touch her. She doesn't want to marry him. So the next day the doctor said, okay, Rabbi, not to touch her. How about she walk not so modest in front of him? The rabbi say, Yehareg velo yaavor. Let him die and she won't do it. Then the next day the doctor say, okay, she won't walk in front of him. She will speak to him from beyond the wall. There's a wall between them. She's going to stand here and he's going to stand on the other side. They don't see each other. How are you today, beautiful son? I heard this rabbi is coming to visit in our town. What's the problem? It's like talking on the phone. Like today, a lot of teenage, all day on the phone. The Gemara says, and the Gemara is what we receive from Hashem. Nobody made things on their based on their mood. The Gemara says, Yehareg velo yaavor. Why? He doesn't speak to her about the weather. What's the initial reason that he wants to even get in touch with her in any way? Dirty thing in his mind. She should never agree. Understand? The truth is always above everything. The food is delicious and the kosher food is cold. I remember when I used to be in business, I used to fly to Milwaukee. And I used to work to represent a bank from Milwaukee. I used to represent them here in New York. We had an office here in Port Washington, by the water there. in the industrial park there. So I used to go once or twice a year to, they made a convention in a hotel, everybody comes and they teach a lot of new things in the bank. So there was about 60 representatives from nationwide, and I'm the only religious Jew. There are a few other Jews, but they eat whatever they go and give them. I was the only one that made reservation in advance for them to get me glad kosher food from a restaurant that I told them, wrapped with, you know, in tin foil, you know, specially wrapped from the restaurant. So now all these goyim see that they put tons of food on a very long table. Tons of food, whiskey, meat, shrimps, whatever you can think of. And I have little roll from a week ago wrapped with little cold cuts and some tomato. Everybody thought I'm crazy. They never saw this. Everybody used to come to me, what are you doing? So you're on a diet? It's a special diet? So I say, no, I'm eating kosher. Most of them didn't even know what it is. But some of them, two black guys, when they saw that, they didn't leave me alone. They didn't care about the convention. Tell us. So what does it mean, sacrifice? What does it mean? Tell us about the holy temple. The whole thing, I had to give them lectures about Torah. Right? They were so impressed how someone is sitting in front of all this barbecue food and eat a little roll with cold cuts. Why? That's the truth. Didn't I want to eat all this food? Of course I did. The Torah say, don't say pork is disgusting. It's non-healthy. It's fatty. No, it's all nonsense, excuses. Pork is delicious. The best stuff on earth. I would die for it. But God told me you cannot touch it. That's why, don't touch it. Why do you need all these excuses? It's not healthy. You should see what the pig eats in the garbage. It takes 24 hours to digest his food. Every other animal, it's only 4 hours. So all the germs stay in his body. That's why, yes, God has millions of reasons for his mitzvot. We will never understand one in our lifetime. You know how deep it goes? The more you learn, the more you are amazed. It's interesting. What is it like? You know, a person goes to yeshiva for the first time in his life. He doesn't really know anything. He has a lot of opinions against the oral Torah, against the rabbis, against the laws. He has a lot. But on the other hand, he knows God created the world. The world is perfect. And we have a Torah. And the Torah has interesting things that nobody could write. So every day is putting another piece of a puzzle. Today you learn in yeshiva.